Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, listeners of the Mad Scientist Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, here this week with a special guest co-host. I'm joined by Chris George Zuger. Zugs, how's it going, man?
I am peachy keen, brother. How you doing?
Peachy keen. I'm doing pretty well. You know, it's doing pretty well. Can't really complain, you know. Got off of Facebook this week. Didn't delete the Facebook. I uninstalled it from my phone, which has made me significantly happier as an individual, I would say. Just been pretty nice.
I'll give you a week.
Dude, it's so hard. You know, people... My mom immediately texted me and, like, you know, she was like, what about all your pictures? And I'm like, well, that's why I just got rid of it on my phone, man. Because people are wild about that crap. I don't know. I don't understand it. Anyways, so Zuger is on a radio show with me, with Dave Scott on Spaced Out Radio. The second Wednesday of every month, called Reality Paranormal, where we talk about, you know, the world of the weird and spooky and conspiracies and all that kind of stuff. And essentially the setup is Dave has experienced almost everything, essentially, and so he is a very strong believer in these things, and then Zuger and I are more of the... I don't know, skeptical, I guess you'd say, to some extent, but essentially we're the ones that are kind of like, you know, no, gnomes don't really exist. It's going to be okay.
It's not that I'm skeptical. It's that there is just so much bullshit. Can I swear on the show?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, there is so much bullshit that has permeated the strange and the weird that I don't even know how to, like, it is entertainment... pro wrestling style schlock a lot of the time to appease the lowest common denominator of intelligence in society.
Well, it's a hard thing because, and that's kind of why I think, you know, why I find talking to you so interesting, because you have actually had experiences yourself, you know? And I mean, I never really have. The few experiences that I would consider to be paranormal-ish, I guess. I've kind of come to understand them as not being strange in any way. You know, as having physical explanations that I'm comfortable with and happy with. So, you know, I've never experienced anything that's really made me think, well, I have no explanation for that at all. But you, on the other hand, have had those experiences, and yet, in some ways, are even more outspoken than I am about those kinds of issues, you know?
It's because I have something called integrity, and I do not have any patience whatsoever
for
ridiculousness or stuff that is just so outlandish that that there's no realm of possibility that it could exist. Or even if there is a possibility, it's like there's so many differences. Like, we could have like 150 people or peoples of extraterrestrial origins that are coming to this, you know, outback nowhere planet that's spinning an average star, you know, in the recesses, the boondocks of the galaxy. And apparently they're abducting people, or they're here to save us, or they're here to enslave us, or they're here to eat us, or, you know, whatever the flavor of the week is.
They're here for our gold, or they're here for the Mayans' gold, or they're here to make pyramids, or
they're here to, you know, get nice and personal with you in a anal type of fashion.
Right, it's something,
you know, which is okay if that's your thing, but hey.
So we don't judge. So I think one of the big challenges for me about those topics, right, is knowing people who have had legitimate and oftentimes scary experiences that they've described to me, knowing these people, knowing that, at least believing that they wouldn't lie to me, you know, and being able to tell, you know, I mean, you can always, And I think this is a little bit of the reason why a lot of people get taken in by these stories, is that we all like to think that we can tell when someone's lying to us. But, you know, having people tell you a story that appears to have clearly moved them, you know, for me, regardless of whether or not that event itself really happened the way that they describe it, something happened that made them, that left an impression on them. But on the other hand, you then have these groups or these people who are clearly in it to make a buck or to try and get attention for themselves or to try and, you know, promote a movie or a book deal or a TV show or whatever.
Or all three.
Or all three. And it becomes, in some ways, it's kind of, I think it actually does harm to people in a way that we don't really think of. You know, I mean, the way I like to think of it is, you know, imagine that you were going to, you know, like in Fight Club, right? You're going to a group therapy session for people who are dealing with a terminal illness or something. And then it comes out that one of the people in the group doesn't actually have a terminal illness. They're just there doing research for a book or something, or they're just there because they just think it's interesting, right? In some ways, it's sort of and part of that is just people getting their stories out there in the first place. And that's, you know, when people come on shows like this or on TV or whatever, that's the way it goes. But I do think, though, that there is something immoral about people making these stories up for no good reason. And I think there's also something immoral about people taking advantage of those individuals.
I'll put it this way, and not to be able to insult anybody out there or to... Well, again, I don't really care because I've gotten everything from like death threats to insults, you name it, doing my own podcast, very similar to yours. And I started on the woo, strange, weird and wonderful world of paranormal. And then I just kind of got tired of it. So I'm used to it at this point. The paranormal or the experiencer, and this is my understanding up to this point, the paranormal and the experiencer community is a community of lost broken toys, if that makes any sense. It is for people whom, for whatever reason in their life, they have not felt special, or they have not felt loved, or they have not felt somebody's paid attention to them, and something happens to them, and maybe something actually happened to them, but, you know, or they're just thinking that something happened to them, or something made them believe that something happened to them, and they're like, well, now I'm actually special. Now I matter. And they find other people who have similar experiences, and they share those experiences, and they huddle together in this mass of, I've been abducted by Nordic aliens who told me that next Friday the moon will be full, or whatever, you know, bullshit that they spout out. And there's many, many, many things I've been told. But predominantly people who have experiences are broken people. Not to say that the people who claim and they clutch to the fact that they have experiences are broken people in some way, shape, or form.
I think we have to make a distinction, right? Because there's the group of people who have had experiences, whether or not, again, you know, there's kind of a Venn diagram here, right? There's the group of people who have had experiences, and then there is the group of people who claim to have had experiences and have turned it into a career of sorts or an identity of sorts.
It's
right.
It is the fact that there are people whom defined their identity based on that experience. I've had experiences.
Right.
I don't define my identity on it. I define my identity by the fact that I'm a complete asshole, but I've got a heart of gold. That's my identity. The fact that I've seen a UFO doesn't matter to me whatsoever. You know,
like I love how you threw in the heart of gold thing there. Yeah, but a heart of gold though. No, I agree with you. There's something weird about groups like that, or, you know, there's something strange about turning, and I can see why people would do it in some cases, where you take something bad that's happened to you and you turn it into your identity, right? I think you see that a lot of the times with people who are past addicts, right? Where they, it's so hard to cope with the challenges that they've kind of gone through and with the event itself of being addicted to something, that it becomes part of their identity. And so you have people that turn it into a very positive part of their identity, but then you also have people who turn it into kind of the focus of that identity, right? And I think that there does have to be a distinction between those two things. And I think in this case, especially when it's something like with the UFO world or with any of these, you know, and I think the UFO world is particularly bad about this because there is so much, I don't know, there's not really money in it, but there's just so much like fake fame or so much odd. You know, that was one thing that struck me when I joined MUFON and started being, you know, part of their kind of research side of things for whatever that was worth, was the oddness of, you know, suddenly I had people coming out of the woodwork saying to me, oh my God, you know, this is so great. You're so smart. This is going to be amazing. And it's like, well, you don't know anything about me, right? Like I could be a charlatan too. I could be lying. I could be making all that stuff up. You know, but they just want to trust everyone. They just want to trust everyone. And it's a wild thing to be part of. I don't know. I don't really understand it.
Yeah. It comes down to the new, it's a new religion. People have lost faith with churches because of goodness knows what, whether it's sexual abuse scandals or, you know, people just taking a shit ton of money and they're all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, send me money so I can buy a jet so that I can spread the word of God, you know, to the people of the world. I need a private jet, not the G4. I need the G5 with, you know, this. People have lost. I'm going to say some people have lost faith with that. And they've moved on to the new higher being, which is the extraterrestrial, which is to mix in more of the scientific explanation of where we are or where we're going to be. And there's no necessarily proof to a lot of the dogma that has been put out there. Like, as I said, like everything starts with Bob Lazar and George Knapp. And, you know, God bless his soul. I'm using that term very loosely because who knows? And if George have listened to this, you know, you can take a jump off of a very short pier, but you can cut that out. That's fine. you could take a long walk off a short pier just because it's because of those two, the entire current perspective of UFO and government involvement and government cover-ups was started with Bob Lazar and Area 51. Before that, there was no real talk about Area 51. And the idea of there being something bigger than them, bigger than yourself, bigger than what you currently are in your life and your understanding is very alluring to people. People want to feel like they're part of something larger or that they're in the know. And if they're part of something larger and then in the know, and they know something that is maybe, you know, their neighbor doesn't, well, that makes them feel special because, hey, there's when we were a very primitive species, or I'm going to say primitive species because we still are a primitive species, but when we were a primitive society and information of where to get water, where to be, where the best hunting grounds were, was the difference between your tribe's survival and, you know, being eaten alive by a pack of coyotes or goodness knows what was out there, you know, giant mammoths or giant beavers. We'll go with giant beavers because they were around a long time ago.
It's very Canadian of you.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
those pieces of information were important. This is something that has been passed on through our society, and whether it's training or it's genetic, that type of thing makes people feel powerful. As they say, knowledge is power. Well, yeah, knowledge is power, but is it the right knowledge? You know?
Well, one thing I've noticed, because, you know, and again, I think we kind of, you know, we obviously take different paths to this same kind of conclusion or this, you know, overall, I would say that we kind of argue from the same point of view somewhat, right? That
you just use big words.
Well, I was going to say, right? I think the difference is kind of the tone, right? And so I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because, you know, a lot of people give you pushback because you're very... I mean, some would say aggressive, right, with your rhetoric. Others would say that you're cutting through the bullshit, right? You know, I think it's probably oftentimes more of the latter than it is the former. But I wonder, you know, I wonder what...
Do you want
I always ask
a story?
My,
You want to know the story?
Well, no, I don't want to know the story because I don't want to get in the what's it? I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here. But I guess what I'm wondering is, right? What I always ask myself this: what is the best way? Is there a way to actually convince people that they are wrong about anything ever?
No, there isn't.
No. And that's the thing, right? I want to be ever hopeful that there has to be a way. You know, I have to believe that rational people, given the right amount of information, will make the right decision most of the time. But honestly, if being part of the UFO world, even in the small part that I was in, if it's given me anything, it has made me more cynical about that idea.
Well, here's the thing,
right?
Decision making, and this goes on to my line of work, which is, sociology, advertising, human behavior, how to be able to influence thoughts and actions through information. It's something that I consider myself an expert on. I've been doing it for 20 years, and every single decision is emotion based. Even if you have rational information or flat out proof, you could tell somebody that the sky is pink and they can think, oh man, the sky is pink. And if the sky is actually blue, if they think it's pink, they'll still think it's pink and think, oh well, that must be a lie, or I'm hallucinating or something. Even if somebody has the right information, if they strongly believe in something because of some emotional attachment or some emotional bias, they're going to go with that emotional bias over the rational information 10 times out of 10. The only way that can change is if they have a personal experience themselves, which disproves their bias. And that can be jarring enough to then have them look at the information from a different perspective. And it's very difficult to do that. Like you look at people whom, and this is my own example. I used to be a big Apple fan, And then my MacBook Pro and my iMac recently died. Actually, the last 2 days, the video card finally went on it after like 7 or 8 years. But my MacBook was having issues, and Mac fans, they're loyal to a fault. And I realized, okay, well, I cannot afford a new high-end MacBook Pro. And I needed to do work. I need to make sure that I can apply my craft and podcast. And I did not have the $4,000 or $5,000 necessary to build the machine. Or buy the machine. So I actually went out and learned how to Hackintosh and realized, oh, crap, this is much cheaper and my computer is much better than what Apple could have gotten me. And it was fun to be able to build. And then I had this whole new perspective of, this is a different way. This is new information. This was a new way to look at the product that I was, or the brand that I was identifying with. And I changed my perspective on saying, well, no, why is Apple producing, hardware that can die on you fairly quickly and fairly easy? Why are they using substandard parts and then charging more than their competitors when I can build an equivalent machine, if not better, for half the price? Then I'm like, well, screw Apple in terms of computers. That was the information change. That was the experience change that shifted my perspective.
See, but so I guess though, what I wonder then is, so first off, in the world of the paranormal or UFOs or whatever, right? It seems like that is an always losing battle then. Unless you have some kind of Scooby-Doo-esque moment where, you pull the mask off the alien and it turns out, oh my God, it's been, whoever this whole time, right? But I wonder though, isn't that experience what shows like the ones that we do? Isn't that the experience we're trying to bring them? Right? I mean, that's kind of what I view myself as doing, or trying to do, at least in some cases, is bringing a new perspective to them in a way that is not difficult for people to handle, right? If I guess I'm wondering, do we as a community of people who think that we have the good faith of this community in mind, or we at least have good intentions behind what we're trying to do, when we are trying to talk to people about their real genuine experiences and also determine if experiences are genuine or not, or how can we even determine that or whatever, versus say a more aggressive toned skepticism, you know, like kind of, you know, James Randi type or something, where it's constantly trying to attack or, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder what the fine line is there, because, you know, I mean, frankly, you know, the reason that I got off of Facebook was because it became too much in the UFO world to argue with people and try to make them see sense, right? I mean, it's,
you can't,
it just, you can't. it becomes mind numbing.
You are trying to cut through so many messages, and the thing is, people are going to look out on YouTube, they're going to get their confirmation biases through podcasts or whatever, and you are competing with a dogma that has been so ingrained in people's minds, and it is essentially a dogma that has been based off of a lie, as I said, starting from, you know, like 30 years ago, which was used to sell books, sell movies, sell advertising space for TV shows. It's entertainment. So that entertainment, that paradigm that people have clothed themselves in, which gives them the easy answer for potentially, in some cases, very complex or unknowable things at this stage in our society. If they think that they already have the answer, why would they listen to you saying, like, no, you're wrong, we don't know what this is? Well, this guy has the answer, why would I listen to you? You know, that's what you're cutting through. And people have been bombarded with this stuff for decades.
You know,
it is such a finely crafted narrative that it is next to impossible to deal with. And as you said, you just left Facebook because it was overwhelming. I stopped podcasting for what, 6 months, 8 months? Like, I was sitting on the lake during my vacation and the end of August going, what the hell am I doing with my life talking with these people? I was getting lambasted and you know, attacked nonstop by absolute lunatics. Did you know that I was trolled by a Kabbalah cult at one point? I'm not kidding.
You made it.
When it's like,
you made it.
Like, oh man, like, well, we're going to put a hex on you. I'm like you claim to know Kabbalah. Well, yeah. Like, well, listen, I'm a 32nd degree Freemason. What the fuck can you teach me about the Kabbalah that I don't already know? Like, seriously, motherfuckers. Like, oh my God. Like, it is this, what's the term?
I get what you're saying. It's an impossible. It is a dogma in the sense that the less you buy into sense in some ways in these fields, the easier it is to be accepted in them, and so therefore the better it looks for you.
Go ahead.
Changing gears here a little bit, right? changing gears here a little bit. I wonder, what do you think the best UFO case of all time is? If you were to pick one, do you think any of them are real? Because that's the thing. Being a part of MUFON for that short period of time, being involved in these Facebook groups and things, talking to these people, going to these meetings and everything else, all it's done is it has over time lowered the percentage of cases that I think are genuine. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've gone from thinking, you know, well, maybe it's 10%. To like, maybe it's 5% to, you know, maybe one guy saw, you know, the level of assuredness goes down, and it's hard to understand how that same example or experience doesn't happen for people. But anyways, if you had to pick one, if you were to give me one that you thought, this is the one that I think really happened, which one would it be?
Mine.
Oh, okay, good.
It's the only one that I can confirm.
Well, so why don't you tell us about your experience then? Let's hear the story.
Okay, so, and oh my God, I've told this thing so many times. This might have been, I forget, honestly, at this point, I forget the year now, because there was a lot of scotch the last couple of years podcasting as the theme of the show. So it's a little bit sketchy. I think it was 2013 or 2014. And it was just the start of the summer. I was up at the cottage, which is now currently underwater due to flooding. Thank you, global warming. And it might have been June, might have been July, but it was like the early summer. I was at the cottage of my wife and her uncle, and I saw a glowing orb, which, you know, everyone else had gone to bed. I was outside on the deck having a cigarette before I went to bed myself, and fireflies were out. They were doing their thing, and up above the treetops, there was a dancing glowing orb, like basketball, you know, shaped orange, yellowish dancing orb. And I don't know what the hell it was. All I know is it scared the crap out of me enough that I hid in the washroom with a, you know, antique shotgun for the entire night until the sun started coming up. Cause I'm like, oh my God, they're coming to get me. And it freaked me right out. I didn't know what it was. And there's a good possibility that it was earthquake lights or, you know, ball lightning or something. But, you know, at the time I was really deep into UFOs and I'm like, man, I saw some aliens, you know, or something along those lines. But as time has come on, it's like, okay, well, I don't know what it was. So that would be my unidentified flying object because it was unidentified and it was flying. I don't know if it was aliens or not. I don't know if it was a natural phenomenon, but it actually happened. And that's kind of the major difference to myself compared to a lot of reports that even I've gotten. Like, there was one guy that sent me a Facebook story about how he was being tracked by the Mossad and the CIA and that he'd been abducted like 50 million times or whatever crazy bullshit that he was coming up with. And every single one of his photos was blurry, out of focus, and through a screen door. Like, you know, like,
right, the best conditions. And the thing is,
I have a photo of the orb that I saw, but it was taken on a BlackBerry, like one of those crappy BlackBerries. Not like the Priv, which had a decent camera on it, but I think I had like the Z10 or the Z30 at that point. So the low light imaging was shit. And I'm like looking at this thing, going, I am like, oh my goodness, I'm a cliche.
Right.
Like, I'm right, literally
great.
A cliche.
Oh, great. Yeah.
But no one believes me that I saw it because they're like, oh, well, the UFO guy, you know, my family's like, oh, the UFO guy saw a UFO. Surprise, surprise. But, you know, like, it's not the only strange lights I've seen in the sky. I've seen, you know, just interesting moving straight lights that have just disappeared, you know, after traveling for a certain period of time in the sky that were not blinking, didn't have running lights. I lived near an airport for my entire life. I know what an airplane looks like. So I've seen satellite-looking things, but they were not satellites. You know, satellites, they'll have a certain amount of continuous movement from horizon to horizon or what have you, where it's like, oh, no, this is like moving in a 90-degree angle and then just like kind of disappears into the black. So I've seen stuff like that, but, you know...
But the orb, though, was the scariest, kind of most close thing you've ever had.
I hid in a washroom with an antique shotgun. No shells. Keep that in mind. And in that washroom, there was not even enough room to swing the damn thing. So that's how scared I was. Where it's like rationality right out the window.
So how I have a couple questions, right? So the first one is what size? I think you mentioned it, but like...
Did
it change size? Was it a consistent size?
I'm going to say it was a consistent size. Like again, I'm remembering a thought, you know, or I'm remembering a memory, which is when every single time you do that, you're remembering the last one that you remembered it.
Right. You're rewriting it. Yeah.
All I know is like it was above the treetops. It honestly could have been far away. I thought it was far away at the point. Like I'm looking at this thing going like, okay, well we were in a place called Castleford. And, you know, it could have been as far away as a kilometer or two, you know, or let's say, you know, a mile away. I don't know. But it didn't change shape. It didn't change consistency of color. It just, you know, it was just there. And I knew that it was not close like the fireflies. You could tell a certain amount of distance. This was far enough away that I didn't know how far away it was. But it was large enough that I could clearly distinguish its size and I could make it out. You know, compared to the blackness of the sky.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, you know, it's one question I always ask people. You know, the way that I view this stuff is the more and more the public gets their hands on the information, and in some way that's good, right? It's kind of a funny conundrum, right? I think the UFO world thinks that they want, just like they think that they want scientists to be involved. That's not what they actually want. Right. They want to feel, they want to feel vindicated by science. They don't want to have a discussion with scientists to have them come in and say, you have no data, right? Or you have no evidence. You've done nothing for the last 7 years. That's, you know, they don't actually want to have a good faith discussion with science. They want to be vindicated by science.
Well, the funny thing is that one of my UFO experiences, I actually had a scientist. I talked to an astronomer friend of mine. He's his expertise is actually impact craters. But he was on one of my first podcast episodes, like way back when. We drank like a 26er of like 14-year-old scotch and got completely blasted. It was awesome. And I told him an experience that I had once when I was looking at, I saw a UFO, and he's like, okay, well, where did it go? And I pointed out the window. It went from like here to here, because at that point my studio was in my bedroom and I could see the direction of where it actually was. And he looked at it and he's like, so it was there to there? I'm like, yeah, that was the International Space Station. And I actually went and checked.
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, what was the pathway from this? Holy shit, it probably was the International Space Station.
Right, yeah.
So a lot of the times people don't want to, they want to be vindicated, but they don't want to be told that they were wrong.
No, absolutely not. Well, that was the other part that I was going to, the second part I was going to say, I guess, is too, that they also, the UFO community also thinks they want the media or the public to be interested in this subject. But in some ways, that's also, it's going to be the worst thing for them, because suddenly they're going to have scrutiny of the media and the public and these groups, and they're just going to come across, it's going to be Ancient Aliens, but on a massive scale, right? They're just going to look,
the media doesn't give a shit.
They're going to look terrible.
The media doesn't give a shit.
No. But that's what I'm saying though, right? If they were to have the public's attention in some way, it's hard not to think that the UFO world would flub it. You know what I mean? They just like they've done every other time. But the things that I like to look for with these cases as they become more popular and things is looking for pieces of evidence that are common enough that or uncommon enough that people would not necessarily know about. Right. So things like, smells or specific names or physical feelings or stuff like that, that, it's different than just the general, well, I was abducted and a thing with gray skin saw me and, whatever, right? It's a little bit more distinct than that, I would say. If you had to pick a piece of evidence that you think, let's say, okay, we give you three cases and you got $1 million on the line and you have to pick the one that is genuine, right? What piece of evidence are you looking for?
Is this evidence that I've collected myself?
Yes. Let's say you've done the interviews, you have collected the evidence at the scene or whatever, whatever, right? If you were to decide between three cases, which one did you think was genuine or the most likely to be genuine? How are you going about that? What are you looking for?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
See, this is kind of a tough question, because the only real evidence would be physical evidence. Testimony's worth shit. Testimony's a lead, but in terms of evidence, it is the worst kind of evidence.
Well, sure, yeah. Let me rephrase it, right? Because obviously, we got a piece of metal. You'd be like, then maybe that's the one, right? If you were looking between, if someone's telling you a story that they have had an encounter with something like a UFO or even an abduction, right? Let's get more specific. Let's say an abduction event, okay, right? They think they've been abducted. What is a tell for you that maybe something interesting is worth looking into here versus this person is just making it up or this person is just mistaken or a nightmare or whatever?
This is where it comes to the point where you can tell that I'm not, smarter than your average bear. I would find out what clothing they were wearing during that period of time. if they still have it, or, you know, if they said like, oh, well, the clothing was taken and I showed up naked, or I don't wear anything. Okay, how long ago was the abduction? Okay, cool. Let's see how radioactive you are.
So you'd be looking for radioactivity. You'd still be going for physical evidence, though.
Yeah. And even the thing, I would test the clothing for radioactivity.
Interesting.
Or, you know, if there's any chemical compositions that, you know, don't account for their environment, or, you know, things like fabric softener, detergent that would be accounted for, or human sweat, or what.
If
the clothing was taken off and they just like, oh, well, you know, I showed up next to my bed and the clothing was off there, I'm like, did you go drinking the night before? Did you go to a nightclub? Were you at a rave?
Why do your pajamas have nitride compounds on them? Yeah.
Why was the bottom cut out of it? You know, things like that.
What happened? No, well, that's the thing. I think, you know, it's so interesting, right? I've recently been thinking about maybe.
Well, here's the thing. If the clothing were taken off by the aliens or by the extraterrestrials or whatever the hell you want to call them, and they're living beings, and they did not wash the clothing, then there's a very good chance that there is some type of evidence, either bacterial or DNA evidence from those beings or from the craft itself. Unless it's like, you know, there's some kind of crazy robots or geoengineered androids that are abducting them or something, you know, like, again, maybe the gray aliens or androids, who knows? But there should be some indication that they were in an environment that is unknown. So yes, the physical evidence would be something that would be indicative. Like, you know, testimony's worth crap. Radiological is the next go to. They could say like, oh, well, you know, the husks of the wheat were put down properly. Okay, well, is the circle radioactive and outside the circle is not? You know, that's a way to be able to tell. Is there something that is going on here that can at least lead me to believe that anything that the extraterrestrials were near or had touched or been in contact with in any way, shape, or form, is there something there that is out of the ordinary? And, you know, whether it's chemical, whether it's biological, whether it's radioactive, there should be something that indicates that there is something that was not normal in the environment. And that's something that is not really done. Like, some radiological stuff, maybe. But, like, even to the Stars Academy, they don't have a, you know, anybody who can test metamaterials. They got, like, sports scientists. Like, if you need somebody to check your concussion, sure, we can do that. But metamaterials? No. That's, you know, like, we're just going to drive that across the country and post it on YouTube.
Well, it's also such a funny use of the word, right? Metamaterials. I don't think they realize that it's like using the word nano, right? I mean, metamaterial can quantum. Mean anything to anyone. It's just quantum, right? It's like a woo catch-all.
People don't
term,
understand, you know what I mean? It sounds weird and it's catchy, so they go with it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So,
how would I determine what is genuine?
So you'd still be going for physical evidence, though.
Without
you'd be
physical going for evidence, all it is a nice story. That's it.
It's nothing. Yeah, no. And I think that's probably a good answer, because you're probably right, man. So what is your favorite non-UFO spookiness? What would you say? Loch Ness Monster? You and a Mothman?
Are you like that flasher in Chicago? It's
such
like, oh my
a
God,
fun
I saw
story.
Mothman. Okay, did he touch you? it's either some people on drugs or a guy in a costume, or that there was that one photo that it's like, oh, it's Mothman. No, that's a kite. I found the kite online.
No,
like
yeah, it
minutes.
Is. It is the kite. We talked about it on the show. It was kind of funny. Yeah, it turned out to be a kite. Did you? You know, we recently started doing one. Marie and I on an episode that'll be releasing here soon. We did the Chupacabra, right? And it's such a fascinating case study in how one of these mythologies gets created in real time, you know? And the Mothman is kind of that same thing where it's like it was made up in the moment, right? It was built up around this whole thing, and it's kind of whatever you need it to be. Anyway, sorry, continue your story. So what's your, I mean, I don't know. What's the wackiest one? What's your favorite one to talk about?
I'm an ancient history guy mostly.
Okay.
I'm going to, like, as far as like spookiness, I'm going to say telepathy.
Well, weirdness, conspiracies, any of it, man.
Okay,
precognition, okay.
Because there's something about this, there is something about the brain being able to process information on such a high level subconsciously that, you know, you can get a hunch about something and be right. because there's something coming to your consciousness from all the shit you're taking in that your brain then says, this is something you should take a look at. And then, you know, that's something that's interesting to me.
You know, what's funny. That's always been the way that I've thought of it too, is your brain, you know, 100 times, you know, once out of every 100,000 times, your brain will calculate the chances correctly and you'll be able to predict something going on in the future. Right. I'm with you there. I think that's probably an interesting way of looking at it. Anyways, continue.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of, I'm going to say lost civilizations, but not like the crazy ancient aliens lost civilizations, like the migratory patterns of Homo sapiens and Denisovians, you know, like Denisovians or just mammals in general of the bipedal type, and their you know, migration to the Western world. Also giants. I love giants. I can't stand a lot of the hoopla mythos that's out there because, you know, like X contributor to my show before, I kind of went like, okay, well, fuck all this woo woo bullshit. This is crazy. I can't deal with this anymore. Had a contributor named Denver Michaels, fantastic guy, great author, good gentleman. I can't say a bad thing about him. We were gonna write a giant book, and we determined that giants were either people with, you know, just abnormally large people. So, you know, there was just this offshoot or this clan of just very large people, like, you know, a bunch of Andre the Giants running around type of thing.
Right.
And, you know, just they interbred and they're like, okay, well, now we got like some 10-foot tall, large motherfuckers running around. Or aliens. It was the only two things, three things. So it was either just large people, aliens, or 100% bullshit. Those are the only three things we could determine.
Interesting.
And it was like, okay, so it's one of those three things. Like, there's so many stories about it all throughout history. It has to come from somewhere. I even determined that most of the stuff that was out there, like if you go to Bibliotheca Pleiades, which is this giant...
What a great website.
You
know,
like it's the perfect place if you want to learn how to give yourself a crystal suppository to open up your chakras.
My chakras are so open now. So open.
So open.
Anyways, continue.
So open. The quartz is in me. Oh.
God. Good God.
So, like the giants was kind of a big thing for me. And then reading some of the stuff like on Bibliotheca Pleiades about like Atlantis and all this stuff. It's like, okay, Atlantis... There was geological evidence for an archipelago existing in the middle of the Atlantic during the last ice age due to isostasy, with the large ice plates pushing down on the North American plate, which then basically just bulged the edges of the plates up, which then gave us islands in the Atlantic. Now, if you're talking about flying spaceships and crystal laser beams and all that shit, I don't believe it. Not for a second. You know, be a temperate place where, you know, a people potentially settled during the ice age, trying to get from the, ice shelves, on the European continent and trying to see, well, what other hunting grounds do we have? They did have boats. So that is a possibility. And yeah, you know, kind of just the stories about that. It's cool. It's interesting. There is enough evidence out there to be able to say it's a possibility. And, you know, it's kind of my bag. Cause it's like, well, where did we come from? Like,
you know, the giants thing, the giant stories are ones that I have never. Yeah. I've always kind of just taken it as, you know, yeah, there were genetic anomalies back then too. Right. Of people who grew super tall or whatever, you know, that's always kind of been the way that I looked at those things. With the lost civilizations, I'm also pretty fascinated with the idea of, you know, how far back can we really go? And we're always pushing back the earliest date that humans had tools or the earliest, you know what I mean? We're always pushing those dates back. And it's so interesting to me to think, you know, what do we know really about, you know, the Olmecs or even the Aztec or the Mayan or, you know,
well, you look
civilizations.
Göbekli Tepe, and I'm not going to do the whole you know, crazy. Oh, they predicted, you know, the meteor impact. No, there are a plethora of stone circles that have not been uncovered. Nobody knows really what the usage of that area was. All we know is that it's like 13,000 years old or older, completely sure. Carved in relief carving, which is an advanced stone cutting technique. You know, they instead of carving the animals into the stone, they carved the rest of the stone away to reveal the animal. So that is something that takes planning. That's something that takes resources, logistics. You can't expect a hunter gatherer society where their logistics is, hey, you see that bison over there or that mammoth? Yeah, let's go kill it and eat it. You're expecting them to be able to move multi-ton blocks and then relief carve them, move them, align them to the stars, and then cover them up on purpose several thousand years later. And then, leave them buried for 10,000 years. That's basically what happened. And nobody can explain that. That to me is interesting.
No, it is completely fascinating. It's part of why those shows like that are so frustrating because, I remember growing up watching documentaries and reading books about those civilizations and, they had their bit of woo in them, right? Of course, they always did. But a lot of the times what it was asking were these questions of, the Egyptians had advanced mathematics knowledge that the Western world lost and it was continued in the Muslim world, right? Isn't that interesting? Or, like you're saying, the relief carving, right? That's an advanced stoneworking technique. Well, that seems to suggest that our idea of what these peoples were capable of isn't maybe correct. That is interesting enough for me without having an alien come down and give them laser carving techniques. It's just such a frustrating situation because they're getting people interested in these civilizations. And on that hand, it's a good thing. But on the other hand, they're, spreading ridiculousness and you don't even know what to do with it.
There's always a possibility, and I'm not going to discount completely the ancient alien hypothesis, because anything's possible. John Ward, Egyptologist, says, we don't know, we weren't there. That's his tagline. And we don't know. All we can do is guess. We don't have any physical evidence. All it is just, again, it's a cool story. It's a possibility, but we can't say without a shadow of a doubt, one way or another, whether it actually happened or not. There are a ton of mythologies and stories that have been passed down through various tribes or various peoples or societies that, even the Christian faith itself has some pretty interesting things. If you read Ezekiel that make you go, that's interesting, but you can't honestly automatically go to, it was aliens or I don't know, therefore aliens. It is an abdication of common sense and reasoning, but you can't rule it outright. So, and that's the fine line between skepticism and belief you have to kind of have in this field. And, even if you look at the pyramids, if you had an advanced alien race that came down and visited us and said, okay, we're going to build some pyramids and we're going to align it to, true north, but we're going to, leave it off by a couple of degrees. You think that an ancient advanced society that traveled faster than light or at relative speeds to our planet and had the capability to build a ship that could do that would be able to align it 100% to true north, not just a couple of tenths of a degree off, the blocks for that are not perfectly cut. They're very well placed together and there are stone working techniques that we have today that can do it. So when they say they're so tightly packed together, you can't put a piece of paper together. I'm sorry. I got some houses in my neighborhood, or at least across the street from my, in the rich neighborhood where they're made of stone and you can't fit a piece of paper between them. There's a Serbian Orthodox church that is, it's a small church. It's more or less like a larger chapel, but it's a church. Like it's a smaller community here in Ottawa. And they have completely marble-encased chapel. And it looks, you walk up to it, and it's perfect. It looks perfect. And this is with current building techniques. You know, we can cut straight lines with a diamond tip saw and fit two pieces together. Now, when it comes to like the more strange rocks where it looks like they were molded together, I can't explain that. you got me on that. But still, like you look at I forget his name, but he came up with a theory of the building of the pyramid where it was actually built with an internal ramp. And using the Nile to float the rocks from the quarry up the Nile to the building site, and then, you know, using rollers to get it through the ramp, or, you know, to the internal ramp, and then using a like lever and pulley system to turn the rocks around so it could be, you know, pulled up the other side. And there are imaging techniques that were used on the pyramids, which show that there is some type of internal structure, which makes it look like it's a spiral, you know, ramp on the inside. And they've even found one of the, potentially found one of the chambers that uses it. Now, these techniques are considerably advanced, but for society that may have been building the pyramid for, like, let's say 100 or 200 years, and I know they'll say, like, oh, it was built in 20 years. Bullshit. Cathedrals took hundreds of years to build.
Right.
With thousands of people working on them. Like, you're talking about cathedrals which don't have anywhere near the stone mass that these pyramids do. So you can make it easier to do. And it obviously wasn't an external ramp, because that would have taken more rocks than the pyramid itself. So, you know, there's a video you can find on YouTube that actually goes through the entire technique, and it's using architectural premises to develop it, and it's very, very well thought out. Now, the interesting part about the main, like, the Giza pyramid and that complex. So that entire complex was actually built on a hill, where they leveled the hill, and then they put a base. So you're talking about literally almost like moving a mountain, and they not the place you want to put this thing. You know, engineering wise, it is the worst possible place you could actually build a structure on, because it was, you know, there was a sloping plateau or whatever you want to call it. I'm not a stonemason, but I've
talked
to some who've done this. So they leveled the land and then built a base which is larger than the actual base of the pyramid itself. And they had to do that before they even started building it. So in terms of techniques, my question is not, okay, what were the aliens that did it? Is where did they get the knowledge to do that? How old is the knowledge that they had used to build those structures? Because the pyramids themselves, if you look at them, architecturally, Egypt got shittier as time went on. The pyramids themselves, and any of the structures that they've uncovered in Egypt and on the Giza Plateau, as time goes on, and they move from the old to the middle to the new kingdom, the architecture gets shittier. So they started out and popped out of nowhere with advanced building and stone cutting and architectural and geometric knowledge to do this. And the crazy part is, not only did they have that, the measurements of the earth, as well as phi and pi, are encoded into that pyramid.
Yeah, sure. No,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, that to me is interesting.
You know, it's funny, though, that the pi thing is almost a, the pi encoding of it inside of the mathematics of the structure itself is actually almost a trick of geometry more than it is a trick of, you know, if you build a pyramid or you build a triangular shape, you're going to get pi in there just because of the way that triangles, just geometric laws. Do you know what I mean? It's an interesting kind of situation with that, but
the pyramid is also one arcsecond in size.
Right. Well, it's interesting. It's super, it is super interesting. All these ideas and things, this idea of the perfect geometry and all that stuff. It's fascinating, man. Well, listen, Zooks, thanks so much for coming on, man. It was, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, we're done already?
Super fun. Oh. We're done already, man. It's been an hour.
Oh, man.
I know. I can't believe it. Isn't that crazy?
You didn't have any more questions?
No, man, we are, no, dude, we're good. I think, honestly, you know what? I mean, we'd love to have you come back on anytime, you know, for sure. And Thank you so much. Where are the places that people can find you on the internet now?
Just search Chris George Zuger on Twitter, or I don't think you could find me on Facebook because I'm pretty well hidden at this point because I got to hide from the crazies. But Twitter, you can still find me. Just don't send me any dick pics, please. Or if you do, Dick Clark, I'm good with, but you know, keep your pants on, please.
Rick pics. All right. Thank you so much, listeners. I am, as always, your host, Chris Cogswell. We'll be back again soon with another episode. Thank you again, dear listeners, for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. I have been your host, Chris Cogswell, joined by my co-host,
Marie Mayhew.
If you'd like to contact the show, please send us an email at themadscientistpodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also follow us on Twitter at madscientistpod or at Team Giant Squid for Marie. And of course, you can see us on Facebook, on Instagram, and all over the internet as the Mad Scientist Podcast. And again, our logo is the one with the pumpkin head, so it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
If you've enjoyed the show tonight, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where the money that you give to us will help us to promote this show further, to make it better, and just to spend more time making it.
Yes, we love doing that.
We do love doing that. Our logo was designed by Carrie Shaheen. Our web design is done by Desdemona Howard.
Woohoo!
And our sound design is done by Jake Cardinal. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you. This has been a Damn It Chippy production.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7 Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.